You're with Misty Winston on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello, and thank you so much for tuning in today. This is the Misty Winston Show right here on TNT Radio. We have another incredible show lined up for you today, but first, a rant. So former British MP and broadcaster George Galloway is suing Twitter, which is amazing, as reported today by the Irish Times. So as some of you may remember, about 6 weeks ago, Twitter slapped him with the Russian state-affiliated media label, which is absurd. This is following... Okay, so Galloway... let's get into the details here a little bit before I get ahead of myself. So he's taken high court action in Dublin against Twitter for defamation following the Russian state affiliated media label being applied to his account. He's also claiming apparently in the proceedings that the social media giant unlawfully processed his personal data by labeling and censoring his account. So Galloway presented the mother of all talk shows on Radio Sputnik, as well as Sputnik Orbiting the World with George Galloway on RT, prior to it being shut down due to British government sanctions in March. So the Russian state-affiliated media label had not been applied to Galloway when he was presenting those shows, and only appeared after he stopped presenting those shows on the networks. So it's insane that they even gave him the label, because he is no longer even appearing on those networks. So Kevin Winters of the Belfast legal firm KRW Law is representing Galloway in the matter. And they said that Twitter, when they initially approached them to provide information, Twitter refused to provide information regarding the labeling when asked after it first appeared. This was about 6 weeks ago, like I said. And Galloway said of their refusal that it is, quote, unbecoming for a major corporation, not least of one which styles itself as the public square, end quote. He also said, quote, to have attached to my every utterance on football, to family, on politics, to popular music, a completely false statement that my views are Russian state directed is unconscionable and a daily stab to the heart of who and what I am, end quote. And according to Winters, the case is being taken in Dublin because, quote, Twitter can test jurisdiction anywhere else, end quote, and because Ireland was where the data controller for all EU and UK Twitter accounts are asserted to be. So this makes me very happy. I've mentioned it on this show before. When this label was initially applied to Galloway's Twitter account, he tweeted out that he was going to be taking legal action. But then we didn't hear anything. It went kind of quiet. He didn't really talk about it much. I talked about it a few times. I really hope he goes through with that. I really hope that he sues them for this. And it turns out he is. So I'm very happy that he's doing this. I hope that more people will do this. It's really ridiculous. I have multiple friends who have this label applied to their Twitter accounts. People like Rachel Blevins, who's, from Texas. She's not Russian state affiliated anything. She just happened to work on RT America. Just because somebody works for a network doesn't mean that they are directed in their thoughts or tweets or any of that stuff. And it's very interesting to me that people seem to be fine with the Russia state media affiliated or the Chinese media affiliated, whatever it is. But Rachel Maddow doesn't have a label slapped on her that she's, U.S. state media affiliate. I mean, there's no bigger propaganda racket than the United States mainstream media. So the fact that it is not equally applied across the board to everyone, and it shouldn't be applied to anyone. Let's be clear. Nobody should be labeled as state affiliated media for just working at a network. But it is very interesting to me that they choose very selectively which states they label and which they do not. I'm very interested to see how this goes down. And kudos to Galloway for sticking to his guns and going through with this lawsuit. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out. I do also want to talk to you about a very interesting development today, as reported by Consortium News, which does fantastic work. Please go support them. The smoking gun proving the U.S. involvement in the 2014 coup in Kiev has been removed from YouTube after 8 years. Just very quietly, it's been disappeared. Again, as reported by Consortium News today, it appears as if the most complete version of the intercepted and leaked conversation between then Assistant Secretary of State Victoria Nuland and Jeffrey Pyatt, the then U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, in which the two discuss who will make up the new government weeks before the democratically elected Ukrainian president Viktor Yanukovych was overthrown in a violent coup on February 21st, 2014. The State Department has never denied the authenticity of the video, and in fact had to issue an apology following its release due to Nuland's comment made in the video of F the EU. So obviously the timing of this quiet removal is incredibly suspect. As we all know, mainstream media has been desperately dancing around the realities of the situation in Ukraine and what led up to it, including NATO expansion and the coup as was discussed in this video in 2014. So it's very interesting now that they're just quietly disappearing history, and that should disturb everybody. So this is just, again, another method of narrative control, another way that they are, you know, manufacturing reality. You know, this obviously should trouble all of us. It troubles me. I know it troubles me. Kudos to Consortium News for catching this. They did actually, in their article that Joe Loria published today on this, the transcript is still available. So Consortium News has published the transcript in the article released today discussing the video's removal. So if you want to go to Consortium News and find that, you can read through the transcript still. But the video is gone for some reason. So just keep an eye on this kind of stuff. This is the kind of thing that they're going to continue to do, and not just on issues of Ukraine. And this is not, obviously, not the first time something like this has happened. So just another method of narrative control, something else that we need to be concerned about. So that is my rant for today. And this is TNT Radio.
Less of the culture you don't want.
I've had enough of this cancel culture.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right. Joining us now is Dave DeCamp. Dave is the assistant news editor at antiwar.com. He's a freelance journalist based in Brooklyn, and his work focuses mostly on U.S. foreign policy and war, which, I mean, talk about job security. You can also find and follow him over on the tweeters at DeCamp Dave. Hey, Dave, thanks so much for being here today.
Hey, Misty. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, of course. I'm excited to talk to you. So we're gonna help Taiwan militarily. No, we're not. But yes, we are. But then no, we're not. Oh, boy. Such a mess, my friend. It is such a mess. Biden once again said that said a bit more than he was supposed to. And now it's being walked back again. This is like, what, the third time, I think, that this has happened?
Yeah, this is the third time. Yeah, it's pretty unbelievable.
Goodness. Yeah.
And, you know, this time was really a big deal because he was in Japan on his first trip to Asia as president. And, you know, he was expected to take a really firm stance against China on the Taiwan issue. So when he said that, I mean, he was asked point blank, like, will you intervene militarily if China invades Taiwan? And he said, yes, we have a commitment to do that, you know, which isn't true. But, you know, people took it, many media outlets and maybe, you know, China did at the time, took it as, you know, Joe Biden saying, yeah, so we'll go to war with China if they invade Taiwan. Yeah. And then, of course, like so many times before with his other misspeaks or gaffes, the White House almost immediately walked it back. But I just have a hard time believing that this was a gaffe. And, you know, this could be, other presidents have done this before. And it's pretty funny. There's an op-ed from Joe Biden in the Washington Post in 2001 criticizing George W. Bush after he made a similar slip up. So, you know, this is something U.S. presidents have kind of said and hinted at. I think it is part of the what they call a strategic ambiguity around Taiwan, which means the U.S. won't commit to defending Taiwan. You know, they won't say one way or the other if they're going to intervene. And I think
right. This
is kind of part of the mind games. But again, you know, Joe Biden, who really knows if he was just completely out of it like he appears to be all the time. And
right. But
it completely overshadowed his whole trip to Asia. It's just very embarrassing. And I've seen a lot of media outlets seem to kind of turn on him. I've seen some mainstream articles, you know, just kind of really criticizing him for making this big mistake, especially for us, like while he's flooding weapons into Ukraine and risking a war with Russia, he's also doing, you know, risking war with China. It's really unbelievable.
It's really ridiculous. I mean, and you're right. I don't know that this was a gaffe. It's not the first time that he said this. I think that it is probably, you know, something that is discussed, but we don't say out. It's one of those things you're not supposed to say out loud, but he's just so, you know, mentally incapable that he just says stuff out loud that he's not supposed to. But yes, he, I mean, it is, it's very, it's bad. This, it's bad. It's a bad look for us to be already involved in, you know, a really troubling conflict in Ukraine. We're in essentially a proxy war with Russia. And for him to then be stirring conflict with China, I mean, really, we're going to make both other major nuclear superpowers angry at the same time? What? Mm. Oh, what kind of strategy is this, Dave? It's ridiculous. This guy. I mean, I don't even know what to say about Joe Biden.
Yeah, it does seem to be the strategy. Like they want a two-front Cold War. You know, it's, I mean, I wonder if we should even call it a Cold War right now with what we're doing to Russia, just openly funding a proxy war right on its borders. I mean, you know, we never did this during the Cold War with the Soviet Union. I mean, the U.S. funded the Mujahideen in Afghanistan, but that was, you know, it was known, but it was covert. It was a covert CIA operation. Now they're bragging about it and rubbing it in Moscow's face. But when it comes to the China stuff, what's kind of alarming is how many of the hawks, after Biden said that, we're happy and said, yeah, we should, you know, yes, commit to going to war with China. And there is a lot of momentum on the, you know, I'm talking like the really, the ultra hawks, I like to call them, like Tom Cotton, Lindsey Graham, Adam Kinzinger, are all, they want to change the policy. They want the U.S. to commit to going to war with China. And there's even legislation that's been introduced that would give Biden war powers to fight China if they invaded Taiwan, which would mean if China moved on Taiwan, Biden would have the authorization to go to war with China. And this is being pushed by mostly these crazy hawkish Republicans, but there's also some Democrats that are for it. Elaine Luria, she's a Democrat in the House from Virginia. And she wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post last year that said, hey, let's give Biden the authority to go to war with China. This kind of idea is taking root. And China, you know, as much as the focus is on Russia now, the Biden administration, they're still saying that China is the top priority.
Yes.
In the Pentagon's, you know, they recently declassified their new national defense strategy to Congress, and it said China is the top threat facing the U.S. And so, you know, it's just so alarming what the direction that we're going. It's not enough to risk war with one nuclear power. We have to do it with two.
At the same time, even. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, let's just go ahead and do it at the same time. And I think that you're right, too. You know, China has long been, I think, honestly, has long been the sort of top priority. And I said this at the time when Russiagate first started, that it felt like Russia was being used as a placeholder because we weren't quite ready to go full force at China just yet. And we already have the kind of preconceived bias against Russia. And so, you know, that was just kind of used at the time to, we needed a boogeyman at the time. So we just went ahead and used a tried and true favorite. And that's not to say that we don't also have interest in weakening Russia. You know, and it's what I find so fascinating too, is how open they are about this now, Dave. They don't really hide it anymore. You hear people talk openly about, you know, that the goal is to weaken Russia or weaken China, and especially in Ukraine, where it's supposed to be, we're helping the people of Ukraine, and that they're just very open about the fact that no, we're using this as an attempt to weaken Russia economically and politically and militarily. They're just very open about it, and I don't know really what that says about you know, the discourse and the culture. It's just become normalized at this point. The war and the destruction has really just become normalized in the States, and everybody's just kind of used to, yeah, of course we're going to go to war with Russia. Why wouldn't mm-hmm. we? And it's very weird. It's a very strange time to live in where they're just so obese, just so blasé about it, really. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's scary.
Yeah, no, it is really scary. Just how many people jumped on board with, you know, you have to support Ukraine. And you know, one thing though, there's definitely some cracks starting to emerge here with the dominant narrative. And I think a big part of the reason why is because it, you know, Biden, Congress just gave Biden $40 billion for Ukraine, the majority of which is military aid, is for to ship weapons into a war zone. And I think that number is just so ridiculous. You know, I've seen a lot of people kind of, you know, that didn't so much pay attention to this, even kind of wake up and say, what, $40 billion? And then you include that with the almost 14 that they signed off on earlier this year. I mean, that's $54 billion in 1 year for Ukraine when everything.
It's a couple months.
You know, we're just. it's really. So I think that a lot of people are now starting to question it. Yeah. And I'm sure, I know you have Kyle Anzalone on here a lot, and he's been covering this. So you guys might have discussed this kind of, there is kind of a split right now with, you know, France, Germany, and now Italy. They've kind of come around, are saying, you know, we need negotiations. We can't keep this up. There has to be a settlement. We need peace in Ukraine. And then you have the US, the UK, and Poland and the Baltic states, so more NATO members than not, saying, no, we need to defeat Russia. We need a strategic defeat of Russia in Ukraine, is, you know, how they put it. But this means, to them, I think it means we need Russia to suffer a humiliating military loss, we need their economy to collapse, and we need Putin to be overthrown, which is never, you know, those things are never going to happen. But, you know, they could definitely drag this war out and for years and years, and lots of people are going to be killed. So, but like I said, there's a little reason to be optimistic here, I think. You know, you had about 50 something Republicans in the House vote against the $40 billion, which isn't much really, but I think it's something. And there is an element of the right, you know, the kind of the populist right or whatever you want to call them, that is very against what they're doing, Biden's doing in Ukraine. Hopefully that sentiment kind of gets more popular, but yeah, it's still, it's because, I mean, just imagine, you talk about Russiagate. Like, I remember how everybody freaked out about the Russia bounty story in Afghanistan, which turned out to be complete nonsense.
Yes.
I mean, how does it from Russia, you know, the world is at war with Russia, not the world, because a lot of countries haven't gotten on board. India, China, Brazil, which is a pretty big population, most of the African Union, isn't on board with the war. But if you're in Russia, you know, the West, NATO, the US is at war with you right now. I mean, there's no other way for them to look at it. Could you imagine if Russia had the power to like really hurt our economy, and they did it and they bragged about it? You know, like right now, if we actually believed Biden that it's all inflation is all Putin's fault, which I bet some people do.
Yeah, for sure.
But just picture Putin, you know, bragging about how bad our economy, like, you know, being happy that we're hurting here in America. So you just got to put, you know, yourself in their shoes.
Yes. Yeah, no question. And it's also, I mean, as I mentioned in, you know, my rant earlier, everybody's ignoring the reality of the historical context and our role that we have a major role in what's happening in Ukraine. You know, and so everybody's trying to dance around that and avoid talking about, you know, the 2014 coup and the, you know, expansion of NATO and the what's been going on in the Donbass region for 8 years. And the Victoria Nuland video and all of the things that we have done in order to, I mean, people keep calling this an unprovoked war by Putin. And that is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. And listen, I am anti-war, period. Like, I'm not a fan of war, period. But I'm also not an idiot. And I know Putin's also not an idiot. And if we're looking at it objectively, he has been warning us for years, back off, you know, you need to back off, over and over and over again. And all of his, you know, requests, in my opinion, are pretty, you know, pretty logical. It's nothing outlandish. There's nothing. And that's not to say that he's like a good person. But I think that the narrative surrounding this is wildly skewed. No surprise there. That's what we do in this country. We lie about these things so that we can manufacture consent from the American population to involve ourselves in conflicts like this. This is just another example of that. But yes, it's very frustrating to watch people ignore reality and just continue to fool themselves about our involvement in this kind of a thing. And it's also really frustrating too. And I know you tweeted about this week. You talked about the 54 Republicans who voted against the $40 billion. Yo, the entirety of the quote unquote progressives in Congress voted to send $40 billion into a proxy war. I mean, wow.
Yeah, it's really disheartening. You know, yeah, I said, I always thought Ro Khanna was like, I thought he would be much he would know much better than to vote for that. I mean, you know, I think a lot of the squad were kind of phonies. I could tell early on, except Ilhan Omar, I had a little more hope for her because she was really solid in foreign policy for about, you know, first year or two maybe. But Ro Khanna, yeah, because he was so good on Yemen for a while. And but, you know, he's kind of backed off that too, I guess, because, you know, Biden's in now.
So
that's really disappointing to see. And Bernie Sanders, I mean, I never, you know, I gave up on him a long time ago.
But he's an imperialist.
It's really depressing because, you know, our allies, the people that we thought were our allies on some stuff, at least the progressives in Congress, are just totally dropped the ball and just totally failed. So things aren't really looking that good. And you talk about the narrative now. I mean, Ro Khanna, I think it was in 2018, that he has a tweet talking about how we shouldn't be sending weapons to Nazis in Ukraine. And now, you know, you can't talk about that. Like you mentioned, right, the consortium thing, the Nuland Piat phone call, that was the most definitive proof. You know, it made it undeniable that the U.S. was behind, you know, the ousting of Yanukovych in 2014. And it's been sitting there on YouTube for 8 years and now they take it down. It's a pretty good window into how they're trying to control the narrative.
Yes. But it's very dangerous.
I mean, you had Henry Kissinger the other day say that there should be negotiations. But what's interesting about him, I mean, I know he, you know, everybody was surprised by that. But if you look back, he's kind of been saying the right things about Ukraine for a long time. In 2014, right after the coup, he said, you know, the West shouldn't be trying to take Ukraine. It should be like a neutral buffer zone between Europe and Russia. It should act as a bridge between them. And so are they going to call Henry Kissinger a Putin apologist now?
That would like be pretty funny. I think some people have, honestly. I think some people already have. What I find interesting about the Kissinger thing is, I think some, like, it's fascinating to me when somebody terrible says something that's good and true, how quickly people will bend themselves into pretzels to disagree with them simply because they don't like them. Henry Kissinger is one of the worst human beings to ever walk planet Earth, but he's right here. I mean, just, it's okay. It's all right to dislike him immensely and still admit that he's right here. There does need to be negotiations. So we do have to take a quick break. Everybody hang tight. We're going to be back in just a couple minutes with more from Dave DeCamp here on TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Christina Borgeson.
Freddie, let's talk about the indications of synergy among the U.S. and German facilities in the Ukraine. You talk about workshops, employees attending workshops organized by U.S. companies, Metabiota and Black & Veatch. And explain who Black & Veatch and Metabiota are to the audience so that they know.
Clearly, there is documents and intel available as far as the funding from the GTRA, funding Black & Veatch, which is basically a major contractor. So it's like during the war in Iraq, you have Bechtel, you have the Washington Group. These are big, big contractors. They get millions and millions, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of contract. And their job and their specificity is basically building biolabs, BSL 1, 2, 3, you name it. They are capable of building very highly secured laboratories for obviously very dangerous research.
Christina Borgeson on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Nearly every day we hear dire predictions about climate change from the media establishment, Hollywood, and politicians. They tell us that the world is coming to an end because normal human activity is raising the temperature to dangerous levels. To avoid a hellish apocalypse, they warn us we must immediately change our lifestyles and our very way of life. But are these sensational claims based on solid empirical science? Do the facts line up with the hype? Well, an increasing number of scientists are becoming skeptical. We covered what many of these scientists had to say in our first groundbreaking film, Climate Hustle. From overhyped claims about severe weather events, temperatures, rising sea levels, and even disappearing polar bears, Climate Hustle peeled back the hype and looked at the facts, facts that simply don't add up to any reason for alarm. So this begs the questions. Why would those claiming a global warming catastrophe spread a false narrative? What would motivate them? Why would they try to hustle you? Are they trying to control the climate or you? Well, those are the questions we're going to explore in this film. And the answers may shock you. Order your DVD, Blu-ray, or digital copy today of Climate Hustle 2.
To find out more, go to climatehustle2.com.
Through the training,
through the drills,
through the driving rain,
through borders, through bushes,
through barbed wire,
through doors, through windows, through walls,
through water,
through mud,
through dirt,
through pubs,
through clubs,
through thick and thin,
through the noise,
through the shouting,
through the silence,
through it as a unit,
through it as a team,
through it all together.
Your local infantry regiment is recruiting. To find out more, visit your local army careers office or go to armyjobs.mod.uk. One Army, regular and territorial.
Get breaking news on your phone when it happens. Download our app from the Google Play and App Store now.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello, you are listening to the Misty Winston Show right here on TNT Radio. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I am joined this hour by journalist Dave DeCamp. You can find his work at antiwar.com. He does great foreign policy journalism, and we are discussing a little bit of everything to do with foreign policy today. Before the break, you said that you think that there's some signs that people are kind of catching on to the narrative. The narrative surrounding, in particular surrounding Ukraine, I think, is really starting to fall apart for various reasons. And you also mentioned too how amazing it was to how quickly everybody jumped on. I said that February 24th, when the whole thing jumped off, it was fascinating to me to watch how easy, because I'm obsessed with propaganda. It's kind of my thing, I guess. I've been obsessed with it for a long time. I am fascinated by how it works and how it's used against us. And even I was surprised by how quickly they were able to turn people who otherwise may have considered themselves to be anti-war or at least kind of anti-interventionist within like 36 hours, they turned those people into bloodthirsty warmongers. And that was intense to witness. That was really nuts. But I do think that you're right. I do think that narrative is starting to fall apart. And I think a big part of that and a big help to that, and I wanted to get your take on this because it gave me so much joy, was we talked about Joe Biden's gaffe, the George W. Bush gaffe. That was a thing of beauty, Dave. Was so good. That was so good. Yes. Yeah. What did you think of that when that first happened?
I mean, that was amazing. I couldn't believe it. I had to watch it like 50 times because
I know me too.
it was so like just perfect. Because I mean, if you look at the video on Twitter, I think it has like 30 million views now. So, you know, that could definitely make people think, oh, wait a minute, maybe this isn't so unprecedented what's happening in Ukraine. That's the thing. It's really frustrating for me, you know, working for antiwar.com, people that, you know, haven't been paying attention to the war in Yemen, war in Somalia, the U.S. occupation of Syria, Iraq, all of a sudden become, you know, huge supporters of Ukraine, because that's just kind of what the media tells them to do. And, you know, the context, you know, maybe as time has gone on, more people have actually decided to look into what has been happening in Ukraine over the past 8 years. I mean, of course, it goes back further than that, but modern history, you know, the 2014 coup is the kind of most important event. And then, of course, George Bush, I mean, he definitely has a guilty conscience there.
I hope so.
He has to, because he did nod and say, after his little slip up, I forget exactly how he worded it.
An unjustified invasion of Iraq. Ukraine. And then Ukraine. He was like, and Iraq.
And people like to think that is so long ago. That's a quote I remember from Bernie Sanders when he's like defending Joe Biden in the debate. He said, Iraq was, you know, so long ago. But it's not that long ago. And if you look at Iraq now, everything that's been happening, I mean, there was a ISIS attack yesterday that killed six civilians. You also have Turkey invaded, Iraqi Kurdistan during Russia's war in Ukraine. And, you know, you don't hear about that. They launched a new offensive against the Kurds there. And the country, the political chaos that's going on there right now, I mean, there's all sorts of infighting and you know, this is all a result of the U.S. invading and destroying and destabilizing the country. So, but people like to act like it was so long ago.
Which is weird. That's a very weird framing of it. I mean, really, I don't care how long ago it was. There's mm-hmm. been no accountability for that. There's been no, I mean, no, that was really, we're just going to be like, oh, it was a long time. That's like George W. Bush being like, we tortured some folks, you know, we got to move forward. No, there needs to be accountability for that stuff. Are you joking? Like, that's why this keeps continuing, because these people are never held accountable ever.
Yeah. And they keep getting elected. I mean, Biden, you know, was the driving force in the Senate to get enough Democrats to go along with the war. And, you know, and he lied about it during his campaign for president. He just said, no, you know, I didn't think Bush would do that. Like, yeah, you did.
Yeah.
But the Democrats keep nominating people that supported it. But it's just not, I guess it just doesn't affect enough Americans for them to really care about it.
Such a sad statement, but yes.
Yeah.
That is really sad. And I think, honestly, that's because the American population very intentionally we're so far removed from the reality of war. I think that they learned a lot from Vietnam. I mean, we used to see this stuff. I mean, there used to be journalists embedded in war zones, and we used to see, you know, videos of the coffins and the body bags coming home. And we used to see the ramifications of where the bombs land, not just Brian Williams creaming in his pants when they take off. And so most Americans are so completely removed from the realities of war, and it's so distant to them that I don't know that they're even able to comprehend what's actually happening. It's kind of like very an abstract concept to most Americans. I think I don't think anybody really has a firm grasp about what is actually happening in the world, and that's very intentional. People, I mean, we're all kept in the dark because it's much easier to get everybody on board with all of these invasions and conflicts and coups if people don't see the destructive force, you know. I think that's a really intentional, that's just part of the propaganda game in this country, you know. That's just that's how they do it.
And if you look at Ukraine, I mean, there was I think it was Jim Loeb wrote in Responsible Statecraft that the, you know, network US, you know, cable news networks covered the war in Ukraine more than the invasion of Iraq. Like, there's more segments about Ukraine than there has been about any of America's wars over the past 30 years. I mean, that's pretty, you know, that really shows you the amount of propaganda that people are just getting like pummeled with. And then that on top of their attempts to control the narrative and to label things they don't like, you know, Russian propaganda or Russian state media, like you were saying earlier. Yeah, it's just, you know, they have such a, even though we have the internet and it's very decentralized right now, there still is, you know, the big social media sites, and they have control over them, and it's easy for them to control the narrative, and then they can just smear us as, you know, crazy, you know, extremists that love Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, well, I am Putin's buddy, so I have to defend my friend. It's really my duty. But yeah, and I think that it's very telling. I mean, like you said earlier, it's very telling to watch how quickly people were suddenly, big supporters of Ukraine. We got to save Ukraine. And it's like, wait, what about Yemen? What about Somalia? What about Syria? What about Iran? What about Venezuela? What about the other, I mean, all of Africa, really? I mean, nobody cares about that stuff. And what you said earlier, I think, is exactly what it is. And I've said this before, I think most Americans, and I don't mean this to be, condescending in any way. I think it's intentional. Everybody's very busy. People are just trying to survive. They have to work two or three jobs. They have soccer practice and they have to go grocery shopping. They got to mow their grass. Like, it's very difficult to find time to educate yourself. And then when you do try to educate yourself, it's very difficult to find real information. You have to know where to look. But I think that most people in this country are just sitting around and waiting to be told what they're angry about. And I think Ukraine is a very good example of that. I mean, it was, like I said, like within 36 hours, a very significant portion of the population was all of a sudden bloodthirsty warmongers. And that's terrible.
Yeah, yeah. And you're right. I mean, people have their own things to worry about. I mean, myself, before I started writing for antiwar.com about 3 years ago, I haven't been doing it very long. And I was really following this stuff closely for a few years before that. But before that, I was completely oblivious to, you know, what was going on. I mean, I was in college when Obama bombed Libya, and I barely remember it, you know, and when all Syria really kicked off, I wasn't paying. I had no idea exactly how involved the U.S. was in flooding that country with weapons. I mean, it's stuff for people to know. If people weren't paying attention to Ukraine, the war in the Donbass, all this military aid, although it was, that was a pretty big spectacle during the Trump administration, because he was impeached for delaying military aid to Ukraine for like a couple weeks or however long it was. But a lot of people just, you know, they don't have the time to pay attention. And unfortunately, they can't look to most media outlets to tell them the truth. So it's definitely, it's a big battle. And it's a big part of why alternative media is so important. I think, you know, we just have to, but like I said before, the $40 billion, you know, people see that in a headline, $40 billion for Ukraine.
I know.
We have all these baby formula shortages, inflation and gas are, you know, really crazy right now. It's really tough. And it's really tough for all of us. I mean, there's not much money in doing what we do at antiwar.com. So we are really, we're all struggling right now. And to see how, you know, most, just about all of Congress sign off on this money for Ukraine, you know, a notoriously corrupt government. That was the excuse that they always gave to not admit them into NATO, not admit them in the EU. It's like, oh, they're too corrupt. Oh, well, now we're just going to ship them billions in weapons and money. Some of the aid, they call it direct economic aid or something. They're just handing the government in Ukraine like cash, pretty much, to do with it what they want.
Totally unaccountable, too. Like, there's no oversight. Like, that's what Rand Paul, his whole opposition to that when he delayed it, which, you know, I appreciate him delaying it, but I wish he would have just said, hey, we shouldn't be sending this money to Ukraine, period. Yeah. The idea that they, and there's no conversation surrounding this at all. None, Dave. There's no hand-wringing about how we're going to pay for this. You know, if you want to do anything that serves the people of this country, everybody acts like you're crazy and we can't afford that and there's not enough money for that. But you want to give $40 billion to a bunch of corrupt, crazy Nazis in Ukraine? Okay, already done. It's already done. No conversation needed. Let's do it. And that's really, I think that that's also part of the thing that's really starting to snap people out of it. In the same week, they passed the $40 billion to go to Ukraine, and then they voted down an effort to get $48 billion to small businesses for COVID relief. In the same week, we can send $40 billion to Ukraine, but we can't help small businesses with Ukraine or with COVID relief. And that's, I think that's really starting to snap a lot of people out of it. When you see those headlines side by side, I think a lot of people are like, hey, wait a minute. What about us? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, what, we're not even taking care of the people of this country. You know, it's very frustrating to watch, but I do think you're right. I think it's snapping a lot of people out of, you know, their blind support for stuff like this.
Mm-hmm. People are angry. Which is good, but you know, I also wonder if we are kind of past the point of no return now with all these sanctions and stuff that has been implemented. I think a big thing is Europe, is the EU, is they already banned Russian coal, but they weren't as reliant on that as oil and gas. And now they're working on this oil ban. Hungary is delaying it. They really are against it. But I think that is kind of a big point of no return, is if the EU bans Russian oil, and then if they ban Russian gas, then that means that they're really in it for the long haul. Because right now we're seeing some resistance, like I said, out of Macron and Schultz, Macron in France, Schultz in Germany. You know, and France and Germany were the ones that negotiated the Minsk agreements after the coup sparked the war in the Donbass, which Ukraine never fulfilled. Under those agreements, Ukraine would have ceded autonomy to the Donbass region in the east there, but it would have remained part of Ukraine, but it was never implemented. So I think there's still some will in those countries to end this. But again, there's, I think, a lot of driving them to completely get off Russian energy, which will really, you know, create kind of a new Iron Curtain. And that is pretty scary. That scares me.
Yes. And I worry, too, that we might be past the point of no return here as well, which is, I mean, that's really scary because we are only like 2 or 3 months into this thing. And it's just gotten mm-hmm. so out of control so quickly. You know what I mean? Like, it really has just gotten. I mean, when they start banning Russian cats, I don't like yeah. I don't even have words for that level of ridiculousness. The idea, I mean, and like banning Russian athletes from participating in these are people who have nothing to do with what's happening in Ukraine. They're not government, you know, they don't work for the government. They're just athletes. They're, you know, or cats, like they're cats. It's just mm-hmm. so dumb. And it's just I think it just shows the level of, stubbornness that the West has here. I mean, and again, they're very open about this. They're talking very openly. Multiple high-level officials have said this thing's going to drag on for years and years. They're very openly talking about that possibility. And it's, you know, people who claim that we're doing this because we care about the people of Ukraine need to snap out of it because, again, we don't even care about the people of this country. And I'm to believe that we care about the people of Ukraine? No, what's happening here is the people of Ukraine are being used as cannon fodder in a proxy war against Russia. And that is disgusting. And, you know, it's the idea that they're able to convince so many people that we have, you know, good and true and just reasons for involving ourselves in this, not just involving ourselves in this, but helping to create the environment that caused this conflict. You know, it's very, again, it just speaks to the quality of the propaganda game in this country. And hopefully, as we've said, hopefully enough people are starting to kind of snap out of it because, you know, we need the anti-war movement to be revitalized in a major way. We need people in the streets again, like now, like not tomorrow, not next week, like now. I wish people were in the streets right now, protesting against this and every other conflict that we're involved in. Ukraine is hardly the only one. We're getting ready to send troops back to Somalia. We are the world's bully. So hopefully we can use this as kind of a catalyst to revitalize the anti-war movement, but we shall see. Okay, we'll just take another quick break, but we're going to be back with more from Dave DeCamp right here on TNT Radio.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
The United States is truly in a breakdown crisis. And as I have previously mentioned, I wonder if the November midterm elections will even go ahead. They probably will, but we are in for some volatile months with an escalating war danger with Russia and a serious economic crisis which will be much worse by year's end. Already, supply chains of many commodities are in crisis, which will directly impact plans for the November elections. For instance, Louisiana Secretary of State Kyle Wadoan said his state had to contact every paper producer in North America to ensure supplies were ready for November. This is a crisis that demands immediate attention and bipartisan action, he said, and added that a paper shortage could lead to a serious erosion in the confidence of the elections. This is just one anecdote, but America is hanging by a thread. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
A man's home is his castle, but his men's shed, that's his kingdom. There are now more than 1,000 men's sheds across Australia, and they're more than just a shed. You can make things, grow things, find a mate, be a mate, shoulder to shoulder. The Australian Men's Shed Association can help to find a shed near you. Yeah, there's something for you
at the Men's Shed. This is where you get your daily ration of high-velocity conversation. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello, this is TNT Radio, and you are listening to the Misty Winston Show. I am joined this hour by Dave DeCamp, and we have just been kind of ranting about the entirety of foreign policy. Not really, but I mean, there's a lot going on, so there's a lot to talk about. I did want to ask you about Israel and the recent murder of journalist Shireen Abu Akleh, because you tweeted about this yesterday. There's now pretty solid evidence. I think it was, for most people who were paying attention, I think most people knew that it was an Israeli soldier that killed her. I think it was made pretty clear. There was multiple eyewitnesses who were there and who witnessed what happened. But now there's a lot of evidence coming forward. But it's to me, I think it's going to be interesting to see If there's ever, of course, there's not going to be, if there's ever any attempt at accountability in Israel, because there never is. Let's be clear. There's never any accountability for Israel. This is not the first time they've murdered a journalist. I think they just shot a 13-year-old, 13, 16, I can't remember, a kid just today or maybe yesterday, depending on your time zone. They do this all the time and there is never any accountability. But I mean, now even CNN is covering this. So,
yeah,
you know, can the Biden administration continue to ignore this? Is there ever going to be any public condemnation? Or, I mean, I know that some elected officials came out and spoke on it, but, you know, of course, there's not going to be accountability. I don't even know why I'm asking, honestly.
Yeah, I doubt it. I mean, but that was my point, is that right now, you know, there's definitely been a shift going on with media coverage.
Yeah.
Of Israel and their treatment of the Palestinians, because now with social media, you know, like that video of them attacking the funeral procession, hitting the pallbearers while they're carrying the casket, like,
yeah,
people see that. I mean, there's no justifying that in any world. But when it comes to the Biden administration, you know, I doubt that they're gonna do anything to condemn her killing. But yeah, my point was, I mean, even CNN now, because it was pretty clear from the beginning, and there's been a few media outlets, a lot of Arab outlets, basically concluding that, yeah, it looks like it was a targeted killing of a journalist. So yeah, I mean, hopefully there's enough pressure that they have to do or say something, but I don't know. It'll be pretty meaningless and it won't get anything done. Because you look now, I mean, coming from the Trump administration, you know, Trump was arguably the most pro-Israel president of all time, which is saying a lot. He just let them, you know, expand settlements at a really high rate. And, you know, he recognized the Golan Heights as Israeli. They changed the policy. They say, oh, West Bank settlements, we don't consider them illegal now. The rest of the world considers Israeli settlements in the West Bank illegal. So when you get the Biden administration, they come in and they say, hey, don't expand settlements. Don't do that. We don't like them. And then, you know, a few months go by and they start doing it anyway. And you might get a statement out of the State Department, you know, saying that they don't like it, but that's about as far as it goes. So that's the most I think that we'll see. I mean, you saw after last year, last May in 2021, when Israel bombed Gaza for, I forget exactly how many days it was, maybe 11 days, but it left over 150 Palestinians dead, over 60 children dead. What did Biden do? He gave them an extra $1 billion in military aid. You know, so that's, you know, who we're dealing with here. So yeah, I don't expect anything significant to come out of this, unfortunately. But, you know, the public opinion, you know, this, I think, does a lot to turn public opinion. You know, she's a Palestinian American. She's a Christian too. So, you know, American Christians should, I wish that they cared more about Palestinians.
Yes. I wish, you know, everybody cared more about Palestinians. You know, it's very frustrating that people are so blind to the reality of what's happening. But I do think you're right. I do think that there has been a massive public opinion shift. And it's really been a process. I think it's been happening over the course of many years. But, you know, we're starting to see people now are recognizing the reality that it is an apartheid state more openly. And, you know, we had like the big protest. I don't know if it was last year or the year before. COVID time doesn't make any sense. So it's hard for me to remember when things happen. But there was the protest, the pro-Palestinian protests that happened. I wish we would see more of those. You know, it doesn't really get talked about, though, at all, obviously not in mainstream press. I mean, it's, as you said, it's crazy that CNN is covering, has been forced to cover this. But that's kind of what I'm hoping, like this kind of shift in public consciousness, hopefully, as we can do with maybe revitalizing the anti-war movement, hopefully we can keep like building on that momentum and really get, you know, a Palestinian rights movement really get people involved, because none of this, as you said, there's not going to be any president who ever holds Israel accountable unless we force them to. I say it all the time, the only thing we ever get anything is through mass public pressure. And so I think that this, them killing a journalist in broad daylight and then attacking her funeral, that's really something. Yeah, I think that could be, we could definitely use that as a catalyst. I think a lot of people are starting to, you know, come to terms with what's really happening in Palestine. And, you know, as they continue to slaughter kids, as they just did, you know, I think more people are going to start. I will say, though, that if anybody rivals the United States in terms of propaganda, it's Israel. They're very good.
Yes.
Their mm-hmm. spin machine. I mean, even with Shireen's murder, immediately their spin machine went to work. It's crazy mm-hmm. how good they are. Ugh.
Yeah. Well, you see it when they were bombing Gaza, how they convinced so many people that it was all Hamas. You know, they're just killing terrorists, as they call them. But, you know, there were, you know, a few of the airstrikes hit families' homes and killed children in their sleep. I mean, a good portion of them. But they're able to spin that with our media. I mean, the thing that really got me last year was when they bombed the media building in Gaza, that where the Associated Press had their office. And then AP, they fired a journalist like a few weeks later because she was critical of Israel in like past tweets. I mean, it was just really, it's amazing.
I know.
So
that is nuts. Yeah. The idea that they can, I mean, they just bombed your building, you know, gave you moments notice. I mean, there's video of them inside the building desperately trying to like gather up their equipment and get whatever they could out of there. And then a couple weeks later, you fire somebody because they've been too critical of Israel. Like that really, really lays bare where your allegiance is. Like that's really something. Oh, man. The control that they have.
Yeah. They've said since that they never were shown any evidence that, you know, Hamas was in the office building.
Of course not.
So, yeah.
Of course not. Hamas was never in the building. That was just, like you said, that's just anytime they want to blow something up, that's the excuse they use. Hamas, we got a bomb, you know, and everybody falls for it. And I think also, too, the anti-Semitism smear is losing its strength. You know, I think that through the like Jeremy Corbyn, that being tossed at Jeremy Corbyn a lot, they even use it against Bernie Sanders, who is Jewish.
Yeah, well, a lot of the best anti-Zionists I know are Jewish. So
yes,
you know, when you start calling all these Jews anti-Semitic, people start to kind of wake up.
Start to raise an eyebrow, you know, for sure.
Yeah, another big thing was Ben and Jerry's. They said they're going to stop selling ice cream just in settlements in the West Bank and East Jerusalem, not in Israel, just in the settlements. And the spin machine, I mean, they really went to work. And you know, we have these laws, state laws, that designed to punish people and companies that boycott Israel, and Israel like demanded all these governors to enforce, and they started enforcing them. It's been I'm not sure of the exact count, but at least 5 U.S. states have divested money from Unilever, which is Ben and Jerry's parent company, over their decision to stop selling ice cream just in those settlements.
Wow.
And yeah, it really shows the influence that they have here. But, you know, the more people that see that, just the how they went to work on that, when you realize they're not even boycotting Israel. They're just not selling them in the settlements.
Right.
I think that shows a lot.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think that I heard a story a couple of years ago of a teacher who lost her job because she kind of refused to pledge fealty to Israel. That's very strange. And it's weird to me that more Americans aren't, you know, disturbed by that. I don't know why more Americans aren't. It really does show the power of, you know, the Israeli narrative in this country, how they're able to get away with that kind of thing. And if you boycott any part of Israel in any way, then you're, you know, a crazy anti-Semite. And, you know, it is fascinating. I do think that whole line is starting to fall apart, though, which is good. That's good news. Hopefully that will continue. I mean, it needs to happen faster, though. Let's be honest. Palestine can't wait. We say Yemen can't wait. Neither can Palestine. You know, this needs to end. It needs to end, you know, years ago. So, you know, hopefully that will continue. I hope more people start to wake up to, you know, the bullshit. We shall see. Okay. So we have a couple minutes left. Do you want to tell everybody where they can find you, where they can find your work, where they can support your work, all that good stuff?
I mean, it's all at antiwar.com. I write news articles in, you know, the top section. If you look at the page, it's usually mostly articles from me and Jason Ditz, and then we run stuff from Kyle and Will, the Libertarian Institute. And I'm on Twitter at DeCampDave. So yeah, if people want to follow the news, we try to put it in nice, concise summaries for them in the proper context that you don't get in mainstream. And we're going to be having a fundraiser, I think, starting the first week of June. That's how we're totally supported by our readers. So if you sign up for our mailing list, you'll probably get some letters from us asking you for money. So sign up.
Which... do that, because as I talk about all the time, I know I sound like a broken record, but we have to support independent media now more than ever. We're seeing an unprecedented level of censorship. We're seeing the attacks coming from places like PayPal on Consortium News and Mint News or Mint Press. There really is a desperate effort being made right now to squash independent media in all forms, whether it's, you know, places like Anti-War, Consortium News, or if it's, you know, independent content creators on YouTube. There is a desperate attempt right now for them to squash all of that. And for them, they really want 100% control over the narrative. And they are moving forward towards that at a really rapid pace. And it's scary. It's really, really scary. So please support independent media. If you support Dave, go find him on Twitter at DeCampDave. And you can find links and stuff there to support his work. But, just in general, support independent media now more than ever. Dave, thanks for coming on the show. I really appreciate you taking the time to come on. It was great to be able to just chat with you about, all of the crap going on in the world. There's certainly a lot of it. So I appreciate that. And everybody hang tight. We're going to be right back with more right here on TNT Radio.